Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Megan Chakrabarty. Kenneth Lonergan's film Manchester by the Sea is set against the bleak, beautiful background of the Massachusetts coast in winter. Casey Affleck plays Lee, a janitor who is pulled back to Manchester after the death of his brother Joe. Sitting in a lawyer's office, Lee learns that he's been made the guardian of his teenage nephew, Patrick.
I don't understand.
Which part are you having trouble with?
Well, I can't be his guardian.
Well,
I mean, I can't.
Well, naturally, I assumed Joe had discussed all this with you.
No. He didn't. No.
However, Lee is left to take care of a teenager who's balancing his own father's death with hockey practice and two girlfriends. Lee is also back in a town he left behind after a tragedy that shattered his life years earlier. Kenneth Lonergan directed and wrote Manchester by the Sea, which has just been nominated for 5 Golden Globe Awards, including Best Motion Picture Drama. He's also received nominations for Best Director and Best Screenplay. And he joins us now from New York. Kenneth Lonergan, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Well, I wanted to start by telling you congratulations on the film. The Golden Globe nominations are much deserved. But I also wanted to read to you a particular quotation that comes from New Yorker writer Rebecca Mead. She wrote that Manchester by the Sea burrows into the mind of a man who experiences a trauma that neither kills him nor makes him stronger. Rather, it leaves him maimed. Now, when Matt Damon first came to you for the idea for this film, given that if that's an accurate representation of what the film's about, what was your reaction to this storyline?
Well, I thought it was, obviously I thought it was a really interesting idea for a story. I wouldn't have taken it on. I thought it was just a really powerful situation, and I was interested in investigating it. I think that's an accurate way of describing it, but that's just an opinion. For me, it's more about what the story's about and trying to get the characters moving through it rather than characterizing it one way or the other. Mm.
So tell me, in your words, what is this story about?
Well, so having let myself in for that, I guess the story is about I think you described it very well. It's that's what the plot is, and it's to me the bigger things it's about are people moving on while they're carrying around a lot of grief, people taking care of each other when they're under extreme duress. I suppose those are the two main things I feel the movie's about.
Yeah. I mean, so really one of the underlying events in the film is a truly unspeakable tragedy. I mean, unspeakable to me is exactly the word, so I'm not going to describe what it is. But there's a sense that in the movie, as you're saying, it's like it's about how people can't really move on, don't really move on. It's sort of an anti-Hollywood film in that regard, don't you think?
Yes, I do think so, but incidentally so. I didn't set out to make an anti-Hollywood film, except that I don't like that particular trope that is often ladled into movies, whereby people find some kind of beautiful sentimental resolution to something that's initially presented as being unbearably painful. I mean, I don't think you can have it both ways. If you're going to, I don't like action movies, for instance, that exploit the reality of real people getting blown up and then switch over and say that it's fun to shoot bad guys off the roof. Or, I don't think you can say explosions are fun and horrible in the same movie. I think it's sort of a moral lie in a way. I like, in the very first Star Wars, Darth Vader blows up an entire planet, but nobody takes it that seriously because it's not presented as being serious. It's presented as being a comic book. Mm-hmm. And on that level, I think it's fine. If it was also to try to get us to feel the suffering of the millions of people who were blown up, I think it would be another story. I think it would be a very unpleasant and ugly film in some ways, but it isn't. So obviously my film is nothing like Star Wars, but I try to take the situation seriously, both in the presentation of the difficulties and in the realities of how well or how much it can get resolved.
Yeah. So let me ask you about that, because I think one of the masterful things in the film is that how much of that, what you just said, like people feeling, living the real experiences of grief, how they cope with it or maybe don't, is so brilliantly, chillingly communicated through Casey Affleck's acting of the part of Lee. And in fact, the part of what got me is that he doesn't say much. He doesn't have a ton of dialogue. There's a lot of his grief is on his is in the totality of his body, in his face. He really lives it.
Yeah, and it's an amazing performance. He's just a great actor with a capital G, in my opinion. And I think that but it's such a very full performance because his behavior, mind is always working and his emotions are always working. And it's not a stoic performance by any means. He's someone who's very actively trying to ward off these terrible feelings and these bad memories and is trying to keep himself very busy and who's immersed in the practical side of life and fixing things and arranging things. He's a very able character. He's very good at taking charge and making sure things go as smoothly as possible, even though he's at a social disconnect with most of the people around him. But another thing that I think is, if you're going to try to talk about or you try to explore in a fictional setting grief and the repercussions of the sorrows that everyone's experienced and some sorrows that not all of us have experienced, is that it's not something that's there all the time either. It's something that sneaks up on you. It's something that you can put away for a while. It's something that's around the corner. And you don't always, you know, if you hear your very early in the film, his brother dies and, you know, he doesn't burst into tears and have a monologue about it. Most of us don't. When we hear someone close to us has passed away, the reaction's often delayed. It's often submerged. It's often lost in the details of what you have to do when someone does pass away. Just the way your life is kind of wrapped up in details when things are going very well.
Right. I mean, I want to ask you about one particular scene in terms of how you wrote it or how you tapped into putting on the screen a more realistic representation about how people do have that delayed processing of, I mean, processing isn't even the right word, but delayed experience of grief. Because there's a very harrowing scene where Casey Affleck's character Lee, there's a terrible thing going on, and he's just holding on to a bag.
Yeah.
And clamped onto it. And
yeah.
I read an interview where Casey Affleck himself said that the first time he saw that scene in the script, in his words, he was like, what's really going on here? He wasn't quite sure why the character was doing that and not much else. And then later on, he said he did the scene and he held onto the bag and figured out that that's exactly what his character was trying to do at that moment, just barely holding on. So you wrote that.
Yes, and he did it.
Well, so tell me, when you wrote it, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there, but when you wrote that scene, the first time you sort of conceived of it, did you think about that him holding the bag was going to be so symbolic?
Not in a symbolic way, but in a literal way and in an emotional way. You know, it's a grocery bag. He's gone out for groceries, and I more or less tried to imagine the scene as if it were a real scene and write down what I saw. And I had this image of him clutching onto this bag of groceries. And when we went to shoot the scene, he's holding on to the groceries and then he puts the groceries down and he picks the groceries back up when he gets particularly lost in a conversation with the police. And he's looking for something to hold on to just to get his bearings. And you can then later go out and extrapolate how it's certainly has some real metaphorical value. But at the, you know, like a lot of emotional moments in life, we then act out. You know, you can find yourself holding onto a table very hard when you're hearing some very difficult news, and it's quite natural to want to hold on to something. Or you get a floating sensation when you feel like you're lost, and I try to stay away from metaphors, from consciously using metaphors, because I think I think they come up all over the place anyway. It's just the natural way our minds work.
Yeah.
Everyone who has dreams at night dreams metaphorically.
Have you always been such a careful student of the unspoken ways human beings are communicating?
I don't know. We all notice different things about the world, and I certainly am very interested in how people interact with each other and with their environment. And one of those ways is verbal, and one is nonverbal, and they're inextricably linked together. And I am certainly very interested in it.
Yeah. Well, I want to play another little scene here from Manchester by the Sea. A lot of people have called this one of the emotional, the emotional apex of the scene. And it's actually very, of the movie, I should say, and it's actually very quiet. So here we're going to hear Casey Affleck. Again, he plays the role of Lee. And he's speaking to Michelle Williams, who plays Lee's ex-wife, Randy, and they run into each other on the street in Manchester after Lee has been back in town for some time.
I don't have anything big to say.
It's okay.
I know you've been around, and
Just been getting Patrick settled in.
It seems like he's doing pretty good, huh, considering?
I think he is, yeah.
I guess you don't know this, but I really kept in touch with Joe. It's been kind of weird for me not seeing Patrick. I didn't know.
You could see him if you want.
Could we ever have lunch?
You mean us? You and me?
Yeah.
Now, I love my medium of radio, but really that's a scene that needs to be... You need to see it in order to understand exactly the immensity of what's happening there. You directed this film, too. So can you talk about directing that scene in particular?
Sure. I mean, the famous thing about directing is once you've done the casting, you've done 90% of your work with the actors, which is true. Every time I hear or see or think of that scene, I just think how great they both are. You can just feel how emotionally full they are and how difficult it is for her to start this conversation and how he's trying to you could describe it at great length, and you're basically describing all the complicated ups and downs that they're both going through in that little opening of the conversation. And essentially, you know, we track through the scene, you know, at a table together, and we discussed kind of when the last time the two of them had met so that they would both have the same understanding. And we discussed what had happened the last few times they'd met and where they were each at in the present. We see them at some length earlier in the film, 5 years earlier, when everything's going really well and they're still married. It's a very different scene, but just, I guess what they do, you know, you just try to help them point them in the right direction and let them go, really, because mm-hmm. they're such good actors. They've thought so much about the characters and about where the characters are and who they are to each other. And all you really do as a director with some scenes is figure out where you want to put the camera. And that's a very deep art that I'm trying to learn more about, but where to put the camera that just seems the most natural. It seems like the one place the camera should be. And really give the actors a chance to play the scene. You know, we knew this was an important scene, so we set aside a half day for it, which is a lot on a film set. We only shot for 32 days, so that's a big piece of our schedule. And we wanted to make sure that it fell late in the schedule so that they would have gotten some time to live with the characters and live with the situation. So we really were, so in a way you organize things so that you don't have to do much directing when you're there.
Right.
But all of that organization is directing also, I suppose.
Hmm. So the film is set, of course, in Manchester on the Massachusetts North Shore. You did a lot of actual shooting there. Insofar as the story that you're telling in the movie, could you have told the story if it were set elsewhere?
Well, I could have told the story elsewhere, but not this story in this way elsewhere, because, you know, one of the great things about working on this project was that I didn't know, I wasn't, you know, intimately familiar with Cape Ann before I started, and, you know, can't claim to be intimately familiar with it now, but I did get to know it pretty well, and I got to know it very well in terms of what I needed to use for this particular film. And I got to incorporate what I was learning as I was writing the script and as we were prepping the movie and as we were shooting the movie. So the entire area, you know, it's set in Manchester, but it's also, there's a lot of scenes in Gloucester. There's some scenes in Beverly. And we sort of meander all over the place, as, you know, people from the area know. It's a pretty all those towns are nestled in pretty tightly together. Just it was really one of the most enjoyable things about directing the film was watching the area seep into the material in a way that couldn't be got out again. Uh-huh. There's a lot of logistical problems that come up in the story, and all of the logistical problems that work their way into the script and into the film are logistical problems that come out of the geography of the area. Just for example, Lee's got to get to the hospital where Kyle Chandler's character would have been taken is in Beverly. The school is in Manchester, and the hockey rink where Patrick is playing hockey is in Gloucester, which is all things that I learned doing research. So that works itself into the narrative really nicely, because a big part of the first part of the story is Lee trying to get up there in time before his brother dies. Then when he has died, he has to get to deliver the news personally to his nephew because he doesn't want anyone else to do it. That involves going back to Manchester where he doesn't want to be, which kicks off a tremendous wave of unwelcome memories. And when he gets to Manchester, he finds out that the kid isn't in Manchester. He's gone up to Gloucester for hockey practice, so he has to drive up to Gloucester. And in real life, when you have to do that kind of arranging when your brother's just passed away, it has a big effect on how things go. And it also tells us about him and how dutifully he's trying to take care of all this difficult business.
Yeah, I mean, one reviewer wrote of your movie that Kenneth Lonergan is after a kind of realism rarely found in recent American movies, and I would have to agree with that.
Well, it's very generous.
Kenneth Lonergan, he's the writer and director of Manchester by the Sea. It's been nominated for 5 Golden Globes, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Screenplay, and Best Actor for Casey Affleck. Kenneth Lonergan, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. It was a real pleasure.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.